The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. The Yoga of Self-Perfection, Part 4, Chapter 14. The Power of the Instruments, continuing on page 733. The prana is not only a force for the action of physical and vital energy, but supports also the mental and spiritual action. Therefore, the full and free working of the pranic shakti is required, not only for the lower, but still necessary use, but also for the free and full operation of mind and supermind and spirit in the instrumentality of our complex human nature. That is the main sense of the use of exercises of pranayama for control of the vital force and its motions, which is so important and indispensable a part of certain systems of yoga. The same mastery must be got by the seeker of the integral yoga, but he may arrive at it by other means, and in any case, he must not be dependent on any physical or breathing exercise for its possession and maintenance, for that will at once bring in a limitation and subjection to Prakriti. Her instrumentation has to be used flexibly by the Purusha, but not to be a fixed control on the Purusha. The necessity of the pranic force, however, remains and will be evident to our self-study and experience. It is in the Vedic image, the steed and conveyance of the embodied mind and will, Vahana. If it is full of strength and swiftness and a plenitude of all its powers, then the mind can go on the courses of its action with a plenary and unhampered movement. But if it is lame or soon tired or sluggish or weak, then an incapacity is laid on the effectuation of the will and activity of the mind. The same rule holds good of the supermind when it first comes into action. There are indeed states and activities in which the mind takes up the pranic shakti into itself, and this dependence is not felt at all. But even then the force is there, though involved in the pure mental energy. The supermind, when it gets into full strength, can do pretty well what it likes with the pranic shakti, and we find that in the end this life power is transformed into the type of a supramentalized prana, which is simply one motor power of that greater consciousness. But this belongs to a later stage of the siddhi of the yoga. Then again there is the psychic prana, pranic mind or desire soul. This, too, calls for its own perfection. Here, too, the first necessity is a fullness of the vital capacity in the mind, its power to do its full work, to take possession of all the impulsions and energies given to our inner psychic life for fulfillment in this existence, to hold them and to be a means for carrying them out with strength, freedom, perfection. Many of the things we need for our perfection, courage, willpower effective in life, all the elements of what we now call force of character and force of personality, depend very largely for their completest strength and spring of energetic action on the fullness of the psychic prana. But along with this fullness, there must be an established gladness, clearness, and purity in the psychic life being. This dynamis must not be a troubled, perfervid, stormy, fitfully, or crudely passionate strength. Energy there must be, rapture of its action it must have, but a clear and glad and pure energy, a seated and firmly supported pure rapture. And as a third condition of its perfection, it must be poised in a complete equality. The desire soul must get rid of the clamor, insistence, or inequality of its desires in order that its desires may be satisfied with justice and balance, and in the right way, and eventually must rid them of the character of desire altogether, and change them into impulsions of the divine Ananda. To that end, it must make no demands, nor seek to impose itself on heart, mind, or spirit, but accept with a strong passive and active equality whatever impulsion and command come into it from the spirit through the channel of a still mind and a pure heart. And it must accept, too, whatever result of the impulse, whatever enjoyment, more or less, full or nil, is given to it by the master of our being. At the same time, possession and enjoyment are its law, function, use, swadharma. It is not intended to be a slain or mortified thing, dull in its receptive power, dreary, suppressed, maimed, inert, or null. It must have a full power of possession, a glad power of enjoyment, an exultant power of pure and divine passion and rapture. The enjoyment it will have will be in the essence a spiritual bliss, but one which takes up into itself and transforms the mental, emotional, dynamic, vital, and physical joy. It must have, therefore, an integral capacity for these things, and must not, by incapacity or fatigue or inability to bear great intensities, fail in the spirit, mind, heart, will, and body. Fullness, clear purity and gladness, equality, capacity for possession and enjoyment are the fourfold perfection of the psychic prana. The next instrument which needs perfection is the citta, and within the complete meaning of this expression, we may include the emotional and the pure psychical being. This heart and psychic being of man, shot through with the threads of the life instincts, is a thing of mixed, inconstant colors of emotion and soul vibrations, bad and good, happy and unhappy, satisfied and unsatisfied, troubled and calm, intense and dull. Thus agitated and invaded, it is unacquainted with any real peace, incapable of a steady perfection of all its powers. By purification, by equality, by the light of knowledge, by a harmonizing of the will, it can be brought to a tranquil intensity and perfection. The first two elements of this perfection are on one side a high and large sweetness, openness, gentleness, calm, clarity, on the other side a strong and ardent force and intensity. In the divine, no less than in ordinary human character and action, there are always two strands. Sweetness and strength, mildness and force, Samya and Raudra, the force that bears and harmonizes, the force that imposes itself and compels, Vishnu and Ishana, Shiva and Rudra. The two are equally necessary to a perfect world action. The perversions of the Rudra power in the heart are stormy passion, wrath, and fierceness, and harshness, hardness, brutality, cruelty, egoistic ambition, and love of violence, and domination. These, and other human perversions, have to be got rid of by the flowering of a calm, clear, and sweet psychical being. But on the other hand, incapacity of force is also an imperfection. Laxity and weakness, self-indulgence, a certain flabbiness and limpness, or inert passivity of the psychical being are the last result of an emotional and psychic life in which energy and power of assertion have been quelled, discouraged, or killed. Nor is it a total perfection to have only the strength that endures or to cultivate only a heart of love, charity, tolerance, mildness, meekness, and forbearance. The other side of perfection is a self-contained and calm and unegoistic Rudra power, armed with psychic force. The energy of the strong heart, which is capable of supporting, without shrinking, an insistent and outwardly austere, or even, where need is, a violent action. An unlimited light of energy, force, puissance, harmonized with sweetness of heart and clarity, capable of being one with it in action, the lightning of Indra starting from the orb of the nectarous moon rays of Soma, is the double perfection. And these two things, Saumyatva, Tejas, must base their presence and action on a firm equality of the temperament and of the psychical soul, delivered from all crudity and all excess or defect of the heart's light or the heart's power. Another necessary element is a faith in the heart, a belief in and will to the universal good, an openness to the universal Ananda. The pure psychic being is of the essence of Ananda. It comes from the delight soul in the universe. But the superficial heart of emotion is overborne by the conflicting appearances of the world and suffers many reactions of grief, fear, depression, passion, short-lived and partial joy. An equal heart is needed for perfection, but not only a passive equality, there must be the sense of a divine power making for good behind all experiences, a faith and will which can turn the poisons of the world to nectar, see the happier spiritual intention behind adversity, the mystery of love behind suffering, the flower of divine strength and joy in the seed of pain. This faith, Kalyana Shraddha, is needed in order that the heart and the whole overt psychic being may respond to the secret divine Ananda and change itself into this true original essence. This faith and will must be accompanied by and open into an illimitable, widest, and intensest capacity for love. For the main business of the heart, its true function is love. It is our destined instrument of complete union and oneness. For to see oneness in the world by the understanding is not enough, unless we also feel it with the heart and in the psychic being. And this means a delight in the One and in all existences in the world in Him, a love of God and all beings. The heart's faith and will in good are founded on a perception of the One Divine immanent in all things and leading the world. The universal love has to be founded on the heart's sight and psychical and emotional sense of the One Divine, the One Self in all existence. All four elements will then form a unity, and even the Rudra power to do battle for the right and the good proceed on the basis of a power of universal love. This is the highest and the most characteristic perfection of the heart, prema samartya. The last perfection is that of the intelligence and thinking mind, buddhi. The first need is the clarity and the purity of the intelligence. It must be freed from the claims of the vital being, which seeks to impose the desire of the mind in place of the truth, from the claims of the troubled emotional being, which strives to color, distort, limit, and falsify the truth with the hue and shape of the emotions. It must be free, too, from its own defect, inertia of the thought power, obstructive narrowness and unwillingness to open to knowledge, intellectual unscrupulousness in thinking, prepossession and preference, self-will in the reason, and false determination of the will to knowledge. Its sole will must be to make itself an unsullied mirror of the truth, its essence and its forms and measures and relations a clear mirror, a just measure, a fine and subtle instrument of harmony, an integral intelligence. This clear and pure intelligence can then become a serene thing of light, a pure and strong radiance emanating from the sun of truth. But again, it must become not merely a thing of concentrated, dry, or white light, but capable of all variety of understanding, supple, rich, flexible, brilliant with all the flame and various with all the colors of the manifestation of the truth, open to all its forms. And so equipped, it will get rid of limitations, not be shut up in this or that faculty or form or working of knowledge, but an instrument ready and capable for whatever work is demanded from it by the Purusha. Purity, clear radiance, rich and flexible variety, integral capacity are the fourfold perfection of the thinking intelligence. Vishuddhi, Prakasha, Vichitrabodha, Sarvajana, Samarthya. The normal instruments, thus perfected, will act each in its own kind, without undue interference from each other, and serve the unobstructed will of the Purusha in a harmonized totality of our natural being. This perfection must rise constantly in its capacity for action, the energy and force of its working, and a certain greatness of the scope of the total nature. They will then be ready for the transformation into their own supramental action, in which they will find a more absolute, unified, and luminous spiritual truth of the whole perfected nature. The means of this perfection of the instruments we shall have to consider later on. But at present it will be enough to say that the principal conditions are will, self-watching and self-knowledge, and a constant practice, abhyasa, of self-modification and transformation. The Purusha has that capacity, for the spirit within can always change and perfect the working of its nature. But the mental being must open the way by a clear and watchful introspection, an opening of itself to a searching and subtle self-knowledge, which will give it the understanding and, to an increasing extent, the mastery of its natural instruments. A vigilant and insistent will of self-modification and self-transformation. For to that will, the Prakriti must, with whatever difficulty and whatever initial or prolonged resistance, eventually respond. And an unfailing practice, which will constantly reject all defect and perversion and replace it by right state and a right and enhanced working. Asceses, tapasya, patience and faithfulness and rectitude of knowledge and will are the things required until a greater power than our mental selves directly intervenes to effect a more easy and rapid transformation. End of chapter 14, The Power of the Instruments, page 739.